Good morning. It is, Friday, December the 7th, 2018. I suppose it's Pearl Harbor Day. Isn't that December the 7th, the day we celebrate the attack on Pearl Harbor that more or less resulted from an embargo of Japan put in place by a president who ran as an anti-war president during the election of 1940, FDR? He was anti-war, during the election. But he wasn't anti-scheme, and he put in place a scheme, an amazing scheme, almost as schemeful as my playing of the harmonica. Yeah, so if you have to listen to me play the dread harmonica, my apologies to every proper player out there. I am guilty of the crimes of harmonica. I will tell you also, my intention for today's Little Saigon Report is to not necessarily keep it short, but to keep it upbeat. And what does upbeat mean coming from, Dan? Let me take a swig of some corn syrup and caffeine. What is upbeat? Well, I thought I would talk about a few topics. Yesterday I kind of blew up at an Amazon technical recruiter. I got an email saying, "Hey, there's this really cool job." And so, I'm convinced that 80% of all the job postings for IT are total bullshit. They are the digital equivalent of orange picker jobs down the road from the Grapes of Wrath. I'm just saying. There are no orange picker jobs down the road. And no, most of these jobs are bullshits. But I get this email from this technical recruiter. Let's call him Jim because I'm not going to give his real name. And I kind of lost it, So, I'm very anti-H-1B visa. Sometimes that comes off as people think I'm anti-Chinese or anti-Indian, that I'm essentially a racist. I'm not a racist. I will cover this as my last topic today, but I'm not a racist for the simple fact I pretty much hate everybody, including myself. The entire set of hate is complete. There is nothing in the inverse set at all. But no, I hate H-1B visa. There are a lot of qualified Americans who can do the work. The argument that there's a STEM crisis is both bullshit and cowardly. It's bullshit because it's a lie, and it's cowardly because, we don't say, or at least I used to think in this country, we wouldn't say, "Well, shit, we didn't currently raise a proper generation of farmers. Let's give up on farming and just sort of, I don't know, have a bunch of other countries invade and take over our farms." Nobody says shit like that. But when it comes to technical fields now, it's like, "Well, shit, we don't know how to properly run computer science departments at universities. We're really doing a shitty job in public education. Kids are learning how to be political drones, but they're not actually learning mathematics. Why don't we just give all our jobs to fucking China and India? Or worse, or as bad, ship in people who have no cultural connection, who have less a concept of liberty than the average liberal. Yeah, let's do that." So it's not so much racism as it is this belief on my part that the H-1B visa program is globalist bullshit. And I'm not, like I said, I promised it'd be upbeat, so let's just leave it at that. H-1B is like notoriously shitty globalist bullshit. But I was really mean to this dude, this technical recruiter. I told him words that I don't even, well, I'll repeat. I told him to fuck himself in the worst way possible. I felt like putting together a PDF describing how to peel the potato and cover the potato in vegetable oil or Crisco and shove the potato up your ass. I essentially was very mean to this guy. And his response was, "Well, life's going to be very tough for you in the years ahead." And my only response, my only retort was really, A, you're making some huge assumptions about how many years I have left. And B, dude, to quote Bruce Willis, "Welcome to the party. I've been there a while." I mean, perhaps my ex-wife is right. Perhaps my own negative world as a result of me being a shitty person. That is entirely plausible. You know, you could contend that there's a missing sort of sci-fi TV teledrama from the 70s called The Negative $6 Million Man. I said negative $6 Million Man. So imagine the government went massively in debt to create a negative $6 Million Man. Now, maybe that's me, but I don't think so. I think I'm probably a pretty ordinary person. And in many ways, these are extraordinary times. And none of us is perfect. So I was really mean to this Amazon technical recruiter. But do I feel guilty? This is an interesting thought experiment because I have been acting in my own personal way vis-a-vis my previous employer / contracting gig at Alaska Airlines. And some people may not understand it. I don't really give a shit. I don't, you know, as a little schmuck, as a glimbus, as a 50-year-old man on his way to the great beyond at some point in the future, I really don't give a fuck. I have very little freedom left. There are very few things I can do. As long as I can speak my mind in some fashion, I will. And if I annoy you, well, I'm gravely sorry for annoying you. I'm so sorry. I will hire a couple of tiny fairies to fly a couple of tiny unicorns to get up to my tear ducts to release the tiniest drop of saline for your fucking bullshit. It reminds me of a story. Now, I don't talk a lot about my dad, though I am horrified by the fact that some of my first works of fiction have a little bit too much Romana Clef about my dad in them. That has basically come to an end. I think that demon has been exorcised. I didn't say exercise. No one's going to accuse me of exercise, but exorcised. But I don't talk a lot about my dad. But I was thinking about my dad the other day. Now, so you know, I think the story that I'm about to tell you is from the year 1977 or 78. It could have been 79, but it was one of those years. I think we still lived on Highway 20, and it was one of those years where, you know, I mean, I could have been as old as 11, but I think I was 7 or 8. And it was one of those days where it was basically, you know, back in the day, there were days where the schools would say, you're going to spend the day with your dad. Now, this is crazy. I know this is crazy. I don't even know if they still do this. I can think of all the snowflakes who get offended. Oh, my God, you have a father. Oh, my God, you have a mother. You know, it could be spend the day with a parent, but you have a parent. You're not being controlled by a robot that tells you that you're neither man nor woman but slave. I mean, basically, assuming we're not at THX 1138 quite yet and Robert Duvall is not hitting on the ginger. Back in the day, there was a go to work with your dad day. And I suppose politically correct as I'll ever get, you could, if you only had a mom, that's okay. Back then it would have been okay. You go to work with your mom, excuse me. And, or if your mom had the job, you know, though I did get to live through that social transition, boy, did it work out. But, it was a go to work with your dad day. And my dad was a logger. And I don't know how much more I can say. I know Monty Python freaks are, oh, I'm a lumberjack. You can go fuck yourself. If you had pulled that shit in a Cedar Woolley bar in 1979, well, the dental industry would have loved you. Needless to say, barring the sarcasm from the Monty Python crowd, my dad was a logger. He worked up in the woods. He wasn't huge, but he had his own business at one point. He had lots of chainsaws, lots of equipment. He had skidders and big old cats, you know, bulldozers. I mean, he had a D6. Fuck. He had a D6 cat, man. He had a Garrett skidder. He even had a mountain logger once. And a mountain logger is a big skidder. And if you don't know what a skidder is, just look it up on Google, you fuck. But a mountain logger is a huge skidder. And it had a steering wheel. The Garretts had a joystick. Now, just don't go there. But the Garretts had a joystick, and the mountain logger had a big steering wheel. But these things were monsters of steel and diesel and cable and pain. My dad was a logger. And so I'm going to work with him that day. It's go to work with dad day. And dad tells me a story. And my brother might have been with me. He might have been with me, actually. I think that dad told him this story too. It might be a coming of age story. Now, in defense of my dad, I think it was his way of making us feel safe. So in my father's defense, who is in heaven, I've granted him reprieve. If Jesus can save my wretched soul, he can save any soul. But yeah, my father who is in heaven will appreciate me relaying the story. But he said, you know, and he may have said kids or, you know, kid, when I was working up in the woods, there was this guy who was running chainsaw and cut off his arm. And he put the arm in his ice box, his lunch box, and he drove to Cedar Woolley General Hospital and they sewed it back on. Now, I'm pretty certain that technology probably didn't exist in 1977, even if you were on shrooms. But yeah, he told us this story about a logger who cut off his arm and they sewed it back on. Now, maybe it really happened. I never looked it up. Firstly, because, believe it or not, in 1977, ordinary people didn't have the internet. The internet, as we understand it, was still DARPANET for scumbags sending emails. Anyways, I digress on the history of the internet. But there was no Google, there was no internet. And so I just wasn't interested enough to be, you know, Inspector Keith or fucking Nancy Drew or the Hardy Boys. No. So yeah, he told us the story about a logger who cut off his arm and just gracefully, calmly put his arm in his lunchbox and drove while he's bleeding out. Probably drove an hour and a half with, I would guess, a little bit higher blood pressure to Cedar Woolley General Hospital. Now, maybe he made a tourniquet and maybe he... This is the thing. My dad may have left out details. Like, if you don't know, heavy equipment, like the engine block of a D6 or a Garrett, when it's been running for an hour or two, is hot as fuck. So it's possible that this cutter, and that's what you call a person who runs the chainsaw in the woods cutting down trees, the cutter, it's possible the cutter took his arm that was bleeding and spraying blood and put it against the engine block of a skidder to sort of cauterize it. You know, we're talking a poor man's two mules for sister Sarah type shit. But barring the cauterizing, this is the idea. He drove himself probably an hour or so, because that's kind of how it works. Maybe it was 30 minutes. He drove himself to the hospital and he sewed his arm back. But if he'd cauterized his arm, and I dare say, there must be a doc out there. I guess you'd have to cut off some of the tissue to re-sew it. You know, I'm thinking about this too much. It's entirely possible that this story is bullshit. But my dad believed it. My dad was, in his own way, far too trusting, as am I. And he trusted a lot of people he should have never, ever, ever trusted. And that's a weakness of mine as well. But I think about what I did to that Amazon guy yesterday, and I think about the story my dad told about making us feel safe up in the woods, because I think that was the purpose of the story. Dad wanted us to know that even if we cut off our arms, it was going to be okay. I think that there's a flaw in that reasoning, because I became a rather reckless person throughout my life at various points, in part because of that basic theory. Like when I went to airborne school, and so, you know, yeah, I'm prior service. I'm not some big hero. I was never in combat. I spent a year in Korea, now that we got that out of the way. When I was at airborne school, one of the things at airborne school they do is they show you essentially people who want to be jump masters, I think, packing chutes, and they even let you pack chutes. Now, I would wager that given that I was a butter bar lieutenant with pretty much no experience, and that I was surrounded by, you know, airborne school, you have lots of different ranks. It's basically training school. So you got officers, you got enlisted, blah, blah, blah. But I would venture to guess that the packs we packed were never actually used. I don't know. I'd like to hope the Army has that much common sense. But my guess is that they never actually used the chutes we packed. But they do show you the actual specialists and sergeants and E6s and E7s. No officers would be allowed to pack a chute. Well, maybe. I don't know. I'm joking. That's bullshit. But no, they show you the professionals packing chutes and the ones who know what they're doing. they look very professional. So in my brain, I saw these professionals packing chutes. It seemed like they had pretty good quality control. I figured, fuck, you know, what's the likelihood that I would ever get a bad chute? And since I don't have to open the chute, the worst case scenario is I break a leg or maybe something like that. Actually, I didn't hurt myself. I did have to repeat ground week. So humiliating. Ground week is nothing more than jumping from a 3-foot ledge about a billion times. So I had to jump from a 3-foot ledge about 2 billion times to get my PLFs right. What a load of shit. As an anarchist, I must say the PLF is probably a useful skill, but horrible to fucking have somebody yelling at you because you're doing it wrong. Do you know how humiliating it is to be told that you don't know how to fall? You don't know how to fall correctly. But if I don't know how to fall correctly, I certainly know how to do it humorously. And if that counted for anything at airborne school, I succeeded. So yeah, I think my dad told us the story for the same reason, you know, folks at airborne school see the chutes getting packed, which sounds like a sexual reference I just created. Maybe I didn't probably create it, but chutes getting packed at airborne school to make us feel better, like it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You know what I mean? If you cut off your arm with a chainsaw, it's going to be okay. And guess what, technical recruiters? If you happen to run into a cranky old man who's not long for the planet Earth, probably because of his diet of Nally's tamales, don't take it personally, because this is a shipbird reality. And some of us don't like Seattle that much, even though we grew up around here. Even though I probably have more of a right to call myself a Seattleite than most of the fucks I see on a daily basis, it doesn't mean I love it here. I ran away from this place a couple times, but I always seem to get back to the Washington State and even the Seattle now. Anyways, the next topic I wanted to talk about has to do with me exercising. I decided to start exercising again. I don't know why. It's sort of like, if it weren't for the fact that smoking for the first 2 weeks sucks, I would start smoking again. It's just that I have to get back in the groove. And the first week or so of smoking cigarettes for me is terrible. But yeah, I thought about starting smoking again because it would be good for my health. Let me explain my reasoning. I live in a building where you're not allowed to smoke cigarettes inside, which actually I'm okay with. I also live on the 5th floor, fine with that. There is no elevator, but actually I'm okay with that too. And I figured, what if I was forced to walk up and down the stairs 10 times a day? That's 50 flights of stairs. That's not so bad. If you did that once a day, your health might improve. The cigarettes act as a diet suppressant and an alternative for the food you can no longer afford to buy. I don't know, because you're buying cigarettes. I thought that's a brilliant way to lose weight. And if I did lose weight and get in a good shape and had some doctor certify it, trick some doctor into certifying it. Wow, that's a diet book. But lose weight, smoking cigs, I think will be the number one bestseller next year. But no, I've been exercising again. I've been walking to Volunteer Park. I must mention this as a fact with respect to this, that there's a water tank at Volunteer Park. If you see a scary guy with scary hair walking near the water tank between the hours of 9 a.m. and noon, because I ain't got no job right now, it's me, probably. Walking with determination. Now, let me explain what I mean by walking with determination. For years, I've been the guy who steps aside, to the wayside where the hypodermic needles and the feces is. I would be the guy that walked to the side, and I have been a bit upset with Seattle in recent weeks, but I also don't want to do anything harmful. I don't want to be a bully, but I do want to express myself. So I've decided to walk the same way other people walk while they're staring at their phones, but I don't have a phone. I will simply walk with determination. So the people with phones will bump into me, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry. And I say, yes, you're sorry. I say things. These are just words. But they're words that freak people out. Seeing a man, a scary-looking man, walking with determination makes people wonder, where is he walking and what is he thinking about? And that act by itself, which is inherently nonviolent, is awesome. It's almost, it reminds me of prank phone calling. You know, kids these days, their ability to do prank phone calls is almost non-existent unless you adopt the concept of the burner phone, which I have. But if you don't know what a burner phone is or a burner number, because you can buy these online, you don't actually have to have a phone. They're an interesting concept. They might actually open gateways to a new era of prank phone calling, assuming the government doesn't shove another rod up our assholes. But yeah, I walk with determination. I walk on 12th Avenue, treating others the way they treat me, following essentially the golden rule. But when I reflect that, back onto douchey Seattle, the douchey zombie scumbags staring at their fucking phones, when I reflect their complete bullshit, I am rebuking their bullshit and in the process freaking them out, because they're saying to themselves, here's a person that isn't staring at a golden rectangle. Here's a person that's walking with determination. And the mere act of just doing that, looking like I actually am going someplace, even if I'm quite literally going nowhere, the mere act of looking like I am not obeying a tiny glowing rectangle, dare I say in possession of, or possessed by a tiny golden glowing rectangle, it freaks people out. And I know I should be saddened by this on some level. I know that there's some Christian value. There is a line in the Bible that will describe the pain I will undergo in hell because of this, but it is in fact a form of rebellion that is still allowed. You're not going to get arrested quite yet for not staring at your golden rectangle, your glowing rectangle. You won't be arrested quite yet for walking with determination. But I'm doing that. I'm walking with determination. And this brings me to my next topic. I call myself an anarchist. When I say this, I don't mean Antifa. Antifa is not anarchism. Antifa is bullshit. Antifa is probably state-sponsored through NGOs. Antifa probably has connections with the police department. So if you are Antifa but a legitimate human being, be careful talking to Antifa. I am not a believer in Antifa. I believe in non-aggression, which means the only form of violence you're authorized to use is self-defense, period. And I'm not talking about bullshit Israeli preemptive war self-defense. I'm not talking about bombing your enemies before they bomb you. That's bullshit. That's being a bully. Actually, that's being a cowardly bully. Actually, that's redundant. That's being a bully. No, I'm talking about just self-defense. And that means if you have to, yeah, do it with a gun. But self-defense is all you're allowed to do, to defend your life. And probably by one degree. Probably you can defend your kids as well. You can defend your husband, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. You can defend your friend. But it's basically that one degree of separation. There are no 2 degrees. You don't get to defend the guy that, you know, needs to be defended against, because you go down that road, you're a vigilante, and vigilantes become bullies in a split second. Anyways, I don't believe in government, but yet I know it exists. And the problem is there are a couple different strategies. You can go around breaking the law and committing acts of violence and go to jail. And yeah, maybe you'll avoid the cops for a while. Maybe you'll succeed in avoiding being arrested for a while, but it's not just that the violence itself is pointless. You'll probably end up harming people who have nothing to do with your bullshit. So I'm not a big believer in going around threatening cops or setting shit on fire or committing random acts of violence, nor am I a huge fan of breaking the law. There are probably some laws that ought to be broken. I used to buy weed on the street. I'm not kidding. I had a perfect strategy. I would go to the Jack in the Box in the U District. You all know the Jack in the Box in the U District near 50th Street. If you don't, you're a fuck. You're not a real head. Anyways, I used to buy weed off the street, so I'm OG. So there are some laws I think are bullshit. I think if you're not harming someone else, you should be allowed to do it. And let me correct myself. I think all laws are bullshit, but in terms of the scales of bullshit, like, all laws are crap. Taxation is theft. But some laws are stupider than others. And I know that sounds Orwellian, but I think it is true. murder is bullshit. You should never kill someone. So the fact that there's a law against murder doesn't bother me nearly as much as a law against weed. A law against weed is stupid. A law against drinking sugar is stupid. Okay? A law against killing people or raping people or harming children, I don't like the government, but I can accept that law much easier than the law against weed. I hope people understand that. So I am an anarchist, but I suppose you could call me a pragmatic anarchist. I essentially don't want to get into fights with the government, because here's why. And this is kind of the point of this little rant. To me, the government is like a saltwater crocodile. Now, so you know, I'm not a tough guy. I look scary, especially when I'm walking with determination, but I'm not actually a scary guy. I think it's a shield I wear. So many of us do that these days. It's a fucked up world, and we do that. A long time ago, when I was reading Joseph Campbell and I was in college, I remember Joseph Campbell explaining what the word for mask was in Latin, and it's persona. Personality is a mask, so we all kind of wear these personalities at times. I don't think they're really who we are, but they protect us. Whether it's the personality of the angry feminist or the crazy conservative or the I voted for Trump or I love Hillary or any kind of political bullshit or I don't know. I wear these clothes. Look at my clothes. Look at my shoes. I buy Supreme. Look at all my sweatshirts that say Supreme. I mean, we all carry these things around in order to protect ourselves. I do too. I recall The Outsider by H.P. Lovecraft, and I pretend to be the beast sunking out of the tower, crunking and slunking and crawling out of the tower. I am the beast from H.P. Lovecraft's Outsider. We all do that, you know, to protect ourselves. So anyways, when I think about the government, I think of it like it's a saltwater crocodile. And it really is worse than one. If you can imagine a saltwater crocodile that weighed 10 billion pounds and farted nuclear explosions and had prisons inside of its stomach, like some creepy fresco from the 15th century or something describing hell. If you can imagine a saltwater crocodile that could set you on fire or deliver depleted uranium into your skull case, that's the government. And probably the stupidest thing you could do as an anarchist or any kind of human is fuck with a saltwater crocodile. Listen, if you want to go buy a gun and shoot the crocodile, fine. But the problem is, this isn't an ordinary crocodile. It weighs 10 billion pounds. It thinks it went to the moon, okay? This is a 10 billion pound, tiny-brained saltwater crocodile with delusions of grandeur, okay? Only a crazy person picks a fight with something like that. Now, when it comes to moral principle and free speech, I think I've made it's no mystery. I will speak my mind and walk with determination until the end of time. I was given freedom by my Lord in heaven, so yeah, it's not likely I'm going to shut the fuck up. And if I offend you, Snowflake, if you're a technical recruiter who was really harmed because a 50-year-old man told you to fuck off, well, I'm really sorry about that. And like I said, I'm hiring tiny fairies who can ride tiny unicorns and open my tear ducts for me so I can cry a tiny tear. But when it comes to like saying, well, I'm going to blow up the government. But listen, you're picking a fight with a 10 billion pound saltwater crocodile that, oh, by the way, also plants evidence and will set you up as a patsy. And Ben, like I said, can I underline this? It thinks it went to the moon. Okay? It thinks a lot of crazy things. So yeah, I would not pick a fight with this monstrous, horrible beast. Instead, do what you must to avoid paying it any money. Like, if you can avoid paying it through taxes, if you can use its own laws against it, and you have the resources to do so, feel free, man. Because that money you give it is going to be used to harm people. Okay? Some of us are feeding the crocodile. I'll be honest with you. my anarchism is a crocodile feeding anarchism. I am not ready, prepared, nor do I believe picking a fight with it is necessary because I know something else and something that a few other wise anarchists actually know. This particular crocodile has cancer. So yes, it's a 10 billion pound monstrous mutant crocodile with delusions of grandeur that carries prisons in its stomach and also has cancer, and it's dying. So I don't really have to do anything at this point. This giant monstrosity of bullshit will simply decay and die. Now, does that mean that what comes next will be better? I honestly don't know. I really don't know. The thing about saltwater crocodiles is that they do produce these tiny little parasites that end up in people's brains that make people think they need saltwater crocodiles to watch over them. It's horrible. It's horrible because they wake up one morning and say, "Who's going to take care of the roads? Let's go find a saltwater crocodile that we can feed so it can become gigantic and, you know, go around killing us." But yeah, so I don't know what comes next, but I do know this particular crocodile is quite monstrous. I'm not interested in picking a fight with it, nor any actual crocodiles in Australia. You'll never see me walking into the environs of a saltwater crocodile and saying, "Holy shit, my mind powers are unbelievable. I will defeat the crocodile." No, if you ever see me doing that, you know that I'm quite insane. So I've been talking a while, and that's good because I think I've mostly kept this upbeat. I don't know if I've succeeded. I really don't know. But I want to succeed. I want to be a winner. Isn't it great to be a winner in America? Have a beautiful house with a beautiful wife, a beautiful cat, maybe 3 or 4 dogs, possibly a kid, a 20-year-old Volvo, an 80-year-old mom. I can go to Cloud City Coffee and get my espresso. So neat. I can listen to my friends talk about how bad Trump is. Yeah. Anywho, I think my final topic is going to deal with the subject of hate. Now, as full disclosure, if you don't know that I'm sarcastic by now, I don't know what to do for you. It's sort of sad and lonely out there. It's really, really, really sad and lonely. It's horrible out there. But I thought I'd talk about hate. I deal with rage issues, I'll admit. I've tried all the drugs that the pharmaceutical corporations tell me will make me happy and only have a 50% chance of causing me to harm myself or others. I've tried those drugs. It turns out you don't get the good 50% on that one. So no, I don't, I'm not on Prozac. I do the best I can. Every once in a while I do some weed, probably too much sometimes, and every once in a while I have a beer, sometimes too many beers, but I'm still on planet Earth, my heart is still beating. But I thought I would talk about all of the people I hate, because I thought, what if talking about hate is better than acting on hate? What if simply talking about hate is actually kind of cathartic in some horrible way? So first, I want to talk about black people. I hate black people. I hate their black magic. I hate their black science and their black technology. I hate their beautiful skills and their music. I hate jazz. Oh my God, it's too fucking beautiful. Jazz is too beautiful. A love supreme is beloved by anyone with a soul. Man, do I hate black people for their fucking beautiful jazz and their ability to be amazing. Wow. I hate Chinese people. I hate them for their culture, their history, their fucking ideogrammic language that contains so many symbols for so many things. I hate them for their chicken fried rice, even though I've probably consumed tons of it. I hate them for all of their beautiful women and they're incredibly smart mathematicians. Man, do I hate the Chinese people for being so fucking beautiful and smart. I hate Italians. if you're going to have a spicy meatball, go shut the fuck up. I hate you. I wish Hannibal had won the Second Punic War. I wish he had burnt Rome to a cinder. I hate Italians. Oh my God, I was raised Catholic. Ask me how much I hate Catholics, but especially Italians. I hate Italians. I hate anything to do with Rome or the Vatican. Pizza can go to hell. Spaghetti is coming out my eyeballs. I hate you for your fashion and your beautiful cars. There's a Ferrari dealership up the street. Those cars are so fucking beautiful. I hate you for your race car drivers and your art. I hate you for Da Vinci. Fuck you, Italians. I hate Mexicans. I hate anyone south of the border. If you're a Mexican or a Latino or a Latina, I hate you. I hate you for your positive attitude and your hard work ethic. I hate you for mostly being people who want to just do the right thing and be left alone. I hate you for being morally upright or being drug dealers as well. Oh my God. You know, I mean, I hate you for the fact that, fuck, man, we got to build that wall. I hate you so much. I hate you, Mexicans. I hate you, Indian people. Oh my God, all your Bhagavad Gita or bullshit, your Hindu gods, your elephant gods. I hate all your gods. Shiva. Shiva can take a Shiva in the heart of. That's what I think about all your fucking Indian bullshit. I hate you because you stole my job. I got no work. I can't buy weed. I can't buy food. All I can eat are Nally's tamales until they clog up my hearts with a substance only known to science to grease engines at a high altitude in Nally's tamales. I hate you, you fucking Indians. Da heads for the Nally tamales. I hate Germans. Fuck. What can I say about Germans? Germans are mostly bullshit because they have all the skills and all this amazing sort of inherent cultural history that should make them amazing people, but instead they're jackasses. They're so fucking smart. They make this volcano by Storz and Bickel. It's too fucking amazing. It looks like a mortar designed by Krupp to fire 20-ton projectiles into Oh, fucking Germans. Don't you hate the Germans? I hate the Russians. Yeah, Yanyoga Paruski. I speak a little Russian, you know. The fucking Putin and his fucking bullshit, and Putin and Trump and all that fucking. You can't trust a Russian. You can't trust them. They're hiding in the woods someplace. For their taiga, their fucking woods that go on forever, for their Lake Baikal, fucking giant fucking open water, freshwater lake. What the fuck? I hate you for all the shit that's in Lake Baikal. I hate you, Russians. Above all my hatreds, and I have so many, I would like to enumerate all my hatreds, but of all the hatreds, there is one that is the most savory. It is the most savory, the most salty, the most tasty. It has the flavor of an ancient fish that died at the bottom of the Baltic Sea, buried under the bones and the weight of 1,000 dead virgins from all the fucking Vikings who got drunk and acted in really shitty ways. I hate Denmark. I hate Danish people. I hate Denmark. Of all the horrible places on Earth, and I can tell you there are a lot of shitty places on planet Earth, no place is worse than Denmark. You know what a white person is? A white person is a Danish person. A Danish person is a white person. There would be no white people if it weren't for the fucking Danes. The Germans wouldn't have existed if it weren't for a fucking Dane. The original white person was born in Copenhagen 6.2 million years ago. Yeah, Jesus might be black. The devil is fucking Danish. I'm telling you. The Danes are fucking Tivoli. What the fuck is Tivoli? Never been there. Sounds like bullshit. Fucking Christiania. Oh yeah, we're a bunch of fucking anarchists smoking weed because the government had an old prison or insane asylum and they figured if the crazy people will just go to Christiania, leave the fucking place open. I hate Christiania. I hate the fact that Denmark has all these pretty little houses and all these little canals and all these nice people who smile, but you know what they're thinking about? Think about killing you. The Danes will smile at you and then they'll fucking kill you. Fucking Denmark. What else can I say? Oh yeah, fucking red flag with a big old white cross on it sideways. That basically means that they wish they'd been the ones that killed Jesus. Fucking Danish people. Oh my gosh, what else can I say about Denmark? Oh, I hate Denmark for all the fucking shows and movies that end up in America because some stupid fuck with a PhD from Columbia decided it would be culturally significant to translate Danish bullshit into American bullshit. I hate you for your TV shows. Your weird, violent, kind of strange TV shows. Fucking Denmark. Have I covered everybody? Well, you know, here's the deal. I may not have covered everybody, but I don't want anyone to feel left out. If you happen to have a specific race or ethnicity you think that I would hate, I would suggest that you email me at basically DF, that's Delta Foxtrot DF, at dfgtc.org. That's Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Fox. Yeah. Dr. Freckles Global Tontine Club. Yeah, Tango Charlie. That is Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Charlie. .org, df at dfgtc.org. If you think I'm leaving you out, that you too should be insulted by my racism, you can email me. Let me know. Here's what I'd like to say about hate before I go. And I'd like to talk about the race war, because to me, the race war is bullshit. It's total bullshit. It's crap. But it is also kind of funny in the following sense. What if the race war was just everybody for like an hour a year going to a bar and just yelling at people saying, you know, I hate your hair, your tattoos. What if we actually just spent an hour? I know this sounds Orwellian, but I'm not talking about the Orwellian bullshit where we give somebody an arbitrary fucking Goldstein and say, I hate this guy, this Goldstein. No, I'm talking about just people for an hour a year, just letting their inhibitions go, not in a violent way. You know, if someone wants to walk away from you, let them walk away. Don't keep a person listening to your bullshit. But you just express yourself. If you're walking down the street on that particular day and you think somebody's a total jackass, you say, you know, I think you're a fucking jackass. And the person might respond, oh my God, you're an asshole. As long as there's no violence, no punching, no kicking, no scratching, no violence. As long as you let people walk away. What if we all did that? And then at the end of the day, at the end of the race war day, we all go have a beer. And maybe we aren't all going to like each other. I hate to break it to you. Not everyone likes me. In fact, probably the finite niche of people that like me, it really is an exclusive club. Not everybody likes me. Not everybody likes you. You may have a bigger club. You may have 30,000 Facebook followers. I don't know. Although, yeah. You might have 30,000 Facebook followers, but not everyone likes you. There are people who don't. It's one of those issues that it seems so complicated, but it's not. It's why I support free speech. I don't think it's okay to be mean to other people. I don't go out of my way to be mean, but the problem is we need to get over ourselves. Sometimes people are going to be mean to you. Sometimes they're going to be mean to me. I got to tell you, I've been enough software IT meetings in the Seattle area over the years. I already know people are going to be mean to me. It is as true as the sun rising tomorrow, if not more true. People will be mean to you. They're going to say shitty things. And as long as they're not physically harming you, and as long as you have a way to walk away, or better yet, to just make your position known, because instead of just letting someone be mean to you, why don't you light them up in return? And if you come back and say, well, Dan, it's my boss. Well, guess what? You can take a look at my resume and one day, peruse my resume and ask if I take bullshit. It doesn't mean I have a good life, but I don't take any fucking bullshit. Eventually, you will find out how I feel about you if you treat me like shit. That is an eternal verity vis-a-vis my professional career path so far. And if you say, well, you're never going to succeed doing that, listen, if success in a shitty world means being a shitty person, I think I'd rather starve to death. What if for a day a year we just were jerks to each other verbally? If we wanted to be, nobody gets forced to do this. If you actually love everyone, God bless you. But if you don't love everyone, what if for a day all we did was just say what we felt, be maybe even terribly racist, sexist things, as long as we're not hurting children, as long as we're not being violent towards each other, what if we just did that for a day? And then at the end of the day, we declare the end of the race war once a year, every year. The race war is over. Maybe we can try something different. I mean, I don't like wars, but if wars were only things like dance-offs or you pick the best martial artist, and if the outcome of the war punished no one, which means at the end of the war, you don't get to take territory, you don't get to rape people, it's the dance-off, credit goes to, you know, first place Puerto Rico, second place Russia. I don't know. I think the Russians are probably pretty good dancers too. They would be underdogs, but they'd probably do well. But if war was just a dance-off or people yelling at each other and just then just having a beer, I don't know if I'd have issues. I don't think I would have issues with wars. Wars are not like that. Wars usually involve massive slaughter, massive death, lots and lots of body bags, lots of blood. But if a war was just, especially a race war, was just a bunch of people being dicks to each other for a day, being total scumbags, like me, iterating my list of people I hate, and I must say, I really do hate Danish people, but if it was just me just hating Danish people for a whole day, mocking Denmark, mocking the Danish Foundation, mocking all the Danish people of Seattle who are so smug and go to Larson's to get their fucking Kris Kringla, okay? If that was the race war, if it was just me yelling at Danish people for a day and then maybe having a beer with a Danish person, because that would be choice too, maybe. I might have a beer with a Danish person. I might buy the beer and toss it in their face, which would technically be an act of violence, and let the chips fall where they may, or I might just drink alone. But the point is, what if that's all there was to the race war? I know that's crazy. I'm a crazy old man. My name is Dan. It all sort of rhymes. I know that what I want out of this world is impossible. Not perfect, which is funny. I don't have dreams of utopia. Probably because I'm not a mass murderer. But yeah, I don't want utopia. I wonder sometimes, what if we all just got over our bullshit, to include me? I am no fucking exception. Maybe the world would be a better place. Anyways, I'm going to leave you with these thoughts and these final musical bullshits from this crappy harmonica of mine. Goodbye.